There was no moon at the time when the blacks populated Australia, or for a very long time afterwards. There had been two very small moons much earlier, about 6 million years ago, which revolved around Earth, eventually colliding with it. Earth was not inhabited at the time, so, although terrible cataclysms followed, it didn't really matter. About 500,000 years ago, Earth captured a much larger moon, the one which exists now. It was passing too close to your planet and was attracted into an orbit. This often happens with moons. Further catastrophes were provoked by this event. What do you mean when you say passing too close to Earth? Why didn't it crash? And anyway, what is a moon? It could have crashed indeed, but that doesn't often happen. A moon is originally a small planet revolving around its sun in a spiral that becomes increasingly tight. The smaller planets spiral more rapidly than the larger ones, because their 7 inertial force is less. Their spiral being faster, the smaller planets often catch up to the larger planets and, if they pass too closely, the gravitational attraction of the planet will be stronger than that of the sun. The smaller planet begins to orbit the larger one, still in a spiral, which will sooner or later result in a collision. Are you saying that our beautiful moon, celebrated in poem and song, will one day fall on our heads? One day, yes. But not for about 195,000 years. I must have seemed relieved and my fright somewhat comical, for my hosts all laughed. Thou continued. When that happens, when the moon collides with the Earth, that will be the end of your planet. If the people of Earth are not sufficiently spiritually and technologically advanced at the time, it will mean a holocaust. But, if they are, they will have evacuated to another planet. Everything in its time though, Michelle. For now, I must finish off my story concerning the continent of Mu. Savanasa then, was situated on a vast plateau overlooking plains which rose, on average, no more than 30 meters above sea level. On this plateau and in the center, an enormous pyramid was constructed. Each stone used in its construction, some weighing more than 50 tons, was cut precisely to within 1/5 of a millimeter, using what we can call ultrasonic vibratory systems. This was done in the quarries of Halitan, now found on Easter Island, which was the one place on the entire continent where this special rock could be found. There was, however, another quarry at Natora, southwest of the continent. The enormous stones were transported using anti-gravitational techniques well known to these people. They were carried on platforms, 20 centimeters above the paved roads, which were constructed using the same principles as those of the pyramids. Roads such as these were built all over the country, converging, like a massive spider's web, on the capital, Savanasa. The huge stones were taken to Savanasa and put into position according to directions from the master or chief architect on the project. When finished, the pyramid measured exactly 440.01 meters in height and its four faces were oriented precisely towards the four points of the compass. Was this intended to be the king's palace, or his tomb? Everyone wore the same indulgent smile that often appeared when I asked a question. Nothing of the sort, Michelle. This pyramid was much more important. It was a tool. An enormous tool, I admit, but a tool just the same. So, too, was the Pyramid of Cops, in Egypt, though it was much smaller in size. A tool? Please explain, I'm no longer with you. It was true I was having trouble following Thou, but I could sense one of the great mysteries was about to be revealed to me. One which had provoked so much inquiry and had been the subject of so much writing on Earth. You will have realized, Thou resumed, that these were highly advanced people. They possessed a profound understanding of universal law and used their pyramid as a captor of cosmic rays, forces and energies, as well as terrestrial energies. Inside, rooms positioned according to a precise plan, served the king and certain other great initiates, as powerful communications centers, enabling telepathic addition of editor in agreement with the author, communication with other planets and other worlds in the universe. Such communication with extraterrestrials is no longer possible for people on Earth, but the people of Mu in those days, by natural means and by exploiting cosmic forces, were in constant communication with other beings and were even able to explore parallel universes. Was this the sole purpose of the pyramid? Not quite. Its second use was to make rain. By a system of plates, made of a special alloy incorporating silver as its major component, these people were able, in a few days, to cause the accumulation of clouds above the country, and so, to have rain as they needed it. Thus, they were able to create, virtually, a paradise over the whole continent. Rivers and springs never dried up, but flowed lazily across the numerous plains of a land that was essentially flat. Fruit trees were laden with fruit, bowing under the weight of oranges, mandarins or apples, according to latitude. Exotic fruits, of kinds that actually no longer exist on Earth, were harvested in abundance. One such fruit, called the lycote, possessed a property that caused an excitation of brain activity, allowing whoever ate it to solve problems which would normally be beyond them. This property was not actually a drug, but the fruit was, nevertheless, condemned by the sages. The lycote was only authorized to be planted in the gardens of the king. In writing this book, I feel it is interesting to emphasize the striking similarity between this prohibition from eating the lycote, for reasons relating to knowledge, and, in the Bible, Adam being forbidden to eat the apple on similar grounds. Author's comment: man being what he is, however, the fruit was secretly planted in various places throughout the continent. Those caught with the fruit were harshly punished, for they had directly disobeyed the king of Mu. In matters of religion and government, he was to be obeyed absolutely, as he was the representative of the Great Spirit. As such, the king was not one to be worshipped. He simply represented another. Those people believed in Tharoa, the God, the Spirit, the one and only, the creator of all things, and, of course, they believed in reincarnation. What concerns us here, Michelle, are the great events which occurred on your planet, in times long gone, so that you will be able to enlighten your people. I won't, therefore, elaborate on my description of the continent that was home to one of the best organized civilizations to have existed on Earth. However, you should know that, after a period of 50,000 years, the population of Mu was 80 million. Expeditions were undertaken regularly, to explore and research aspects of the planet. For these expeditions, they used flying ships, similar to what you call flying saucers. It was known that most of the planet was populated by black, yellow and also white races, although the latter had regressed into a primitive state due to their loss of technical understanding right at the beginning. These white people had actually arrived on Earth in very small numbers at a time in between the arrival of the Bacaratinians and the colonizing of Mu. They had settled on a continent known to you as Atlantis, but, as much for material as spiritual reasons, their civilization failed completely. What do you mean by material reasons? Natural disasters, which effectively destroyed their towns and almost all that might have allowed them to advance technologically. I must size the following point: prior to embarking on their exploratory expeditions of the planet, the inhabitants of Mu had conducted research by means of the Pyramid of Savanasa. As a result of this research, it was decided to send forth the flying ships and to colonize New Guinea and the southern Asiatic region, that is, all to the west of Mu. Simultaneously, they set up colonies in South America and Central America. Most importantly, they established a colonial base, which grew into a huge town, in the area known to your archaeologists as Teotihuacano 1, located not far from Lake Titicaca. The Andes did not exist at the time, the mountains formed some time later, as you will soon see. At Teotihuacano, an enormous seaport was built. In those days, North and South America were flat and eventually, a canal was constructed to link an inland sea, existing where Brazil is now, with the Pacific Ocean. This sea also had an outlet into the Atlantic Ocean, so that it was possible to pass from one ocean to the other and so, to colonize the continent of Atlantis. But you say they had flying ships, why wouldn't they use them? If they pierced a canal, they must have intended to use boats. They used their flying machines just as you now use aeroplanes, Michelle, but for very heavy loads. They used machines of anti-gravitation, exactly like the heavy vehicles are now used on Earth. So, as I said, they colonized the continent of Atlantis. Many white people from Atlantis preferred, at the time, to emigrate to the region of Northern Europe, as they didn't accept the new government and the new religion coming from Mu. These white people set off in their sea vessels propelled by steam and wind. Indeed, the white race had discovered steam power, having passed through a period you would call prehistoric. I must also explain that Britain was not an island, at this time, as it was joined to Northern Europe, and the Straits of Gibraltar didn't exist either, as Africa reached to the south of Europe. Many white people from Atlantis emigrated to North Africa, mixing with the crossbred black-yellow race of the area. Interbreeding created new races in North Africa, which have perpetuated themselves over thousands of years and which you know as Berbers, Tuaregs and others. We often visited Earth during those times. When we judged the time opportune, we went overtly to visit the King of Mu and, according to his request or the information he gave us, we would visit the new colonies. In India, for example, or in New Guinea, the people of Mu sometimes experienced great difficulties assimilating their civilization with that already in existence. We would arrive, openly and publicly, in vessels quite like the one that brought you to Thaiuba, although different in shape. Our size, which has always been large in our radiant beauty, meant that we passed as gods in the eyes of people who were not greatly advanced and, in some cases, were even cannibals. According to our mission, it was important that we impress as friendly gods in the eyes of the colonizers so that war could be avoided, something which they abhorred on account of their advancement, their beliefs and their religion. It is because of our frequent visits, during this period, that there are so many legends on Earth, describing giants and chariots of fire from the heavens. We were great friends with the inhabitants of Mu, and my astral entity at the time existed in a body quite similar to the one I am wearing now. Artists and sculptors gave us much consideration. They consulted the King of Mu and, with his consent, worked to immortalize us. The immense statues at Hilton, Easter Island, were situated at the southeast of the continent of Mu, are examples of such work. They were, for the civilization of the time, the ultimate of great art, being in size and shape what you would describe as stylized. We can compare this process with a 9-stage filter, intended to rid the water passing through, of 9 elements. At the end of stage 1 in the process, one will have been completely eliminated, with 8 remaining. Of course, to make this information easier to digest, I am making enormous use of imagery. This astral body then, will have completed its cycle with the higher self of the first category and will then detach itself from higher self number 1 to rejoin the higher self of the second category. The entire process will be repeated. By the same token, the astral body will be sufficiently spiritually advanced to pass to a planet of the next category, as well. I see you are not following me very well, and I'm anxious that you will understand absolutely all that I explain to you. In his wisdom, the spirit, by means of the fourth force, provided for 9 categories of planets. At present, you are on the planet Thaiuba, which is in the 9th category, that is, at the top of the scale. Earth is a planet of the first category and therefore at the bottom of the scale. What does this mean? The planet Earth could be likened to a kindergarten with the emphasis on teaching basic social values. A planet of the second category would then correspond with a primary school where further values are taught. In both schools, adult guidance is imperative. The third category would comprise secondary schools where a foundation of values allows exploration beyond. Next, you would go to university, where you are treated as an adult, for you would not only have attained a certain amount of knowledge, but you would also start to accept civic responsibility. This is the type of progress occurring with the 9 categories of planets. The more spiritually advanced you are, the more you will benefit, on a superior planet, by an environment and general way of life which is superior. The very way in which you procure food is much easier, which in turn, simplifies the process of organizing your way of life. The consequence is more effective spiritual development. On the higher planets, nature itself enters the stage to assist the pupil, and by the time you reach planets of the 6th, 7th, 8th and 9th category, not only is your astral body highly evolved, your physical body has also benefited from your development. We know you have already been favorably impressed by what you have seen on our planet. As you see more, you will appreciate that it is what you would call on Earth, a paradise, and yet, compared with true happiness, when you become a pure spirit, it is still nothing. I must be careful not to make this explanation too long, for you must report it word for word, changing nothing in the book that you will write. It is absolutely essential you allow no personal opinion to intrude. No, don't get anxious. Thou will help you with the details when the time comes to start writing. From this planet, it is possible either to remain in a physical body or be reunited with the Great Spirit in the ether. As these words were uttered, the aura surrounding the leader shone more brightly than ever, and I was surprised to see him almost disappear in a golden mist, only to reappear a second later. You have understood that the astral body is a body which inhabits your physical body, recalling and noting all the understanding acquired during the course of its various lives. It can only be enriched spiritually, not materially. The physical body is merely a vehicle which, in most cases, we abandon when we die. I will elaborate, for I see that in most cases has confused you. By this, I mean that some of us, including all on our planet, are able to regenerate the cells of our bodies at will. Yes, you have already noticed that most of us seem to be of the same age. We are one of 3 planets that are the most highly evolved in this galaxy. Some of us can, and do, directly join what we call the Great Ether. So, on this particular planet, we have arrived at a stage near perfection, both materially and spiritually. But we have our roles to perform, as does every creature existing in the universe. In fact, everything, including a single pebble, has its role. Our role, as beings of a superior planet, is to guide, to help with spiritual development and even, sometimes, materially. We are in a position to give material assistance because we are technologically the most advanced people. Indeed, how could a father give spiritual guidance to his child if he were not older, more educated and more skilled in diplomacy than the child? If the child should require physical punishment, as unfortunately, is sometimes the case, isn't it important that the parent be physically stronger than the child? Certain adults, who refuse to listen and who are absolutely stubborn, also need to be corrected by physical means. You, Michelle, come from the planet Earth, which is sometimes called the planet of sorrows. Indeed, the name is appropriate, but it is this way for a precise reason. It is intended to provide a learning environment of a quite specific kind. It is not because life there is so difficult that you have to intervene. You cannot lightly go against nature, destroying rather than conserving what the Creator has put at your disposal, that is, interfering with ecological systems, which have been intricately designed. Certain countries, like Australia, where you are from, are beginning to show great respect for ecology, and it is a step in the right direction. But even in that country, what case is made of pollution, both water and air pollution? What is ever done about one of the worst forms of pollution? Noise. I say worst because people such as Australians pay virtually no attention to it at all. Ask someone if traffic noise bothers him and the response will surprise you. 85% of the time it will be, "What noise? What are you talking about?" Oh, that noise, we get used to it. And it is precisely because they get used to it that the danger exists. Just then, Thora, as this high figure was called, made a gesture and I turned around. He was replying to a question I had mentally posed: how can he speak of percentages and know so much about our planet with so much precision? Turning around, I almost uttered a cry of surprise, for, behind me, stood Biastra and Latley. In itself, this was nothing surprising, but the friends I knew who measured 310 and 280 centimeters in height respectively, were now reduced in size to correspond with my height. My mouth must have continued to gape, for Thoris smiled. Can you understand, that sometimes, and very often in these days, some of us live among your people on Earth, and there is my answer to your question. To continue on the very important subject of noise, it is such a danger that, if nothing is done, catastrophe is certain. Let us take the example of a discotheque. The people who expose themselves to music that is typically played three times too loudly, are subjecting their brains and their physiological and astral bodies to vibrations which are so harmful. If they could see the damage that is caused, they would vacate the discotheque quicker than if there was a fire. But vibrations don't only come from noise, they also come from colors, and it is astonishing that, on your planet, experiments conducted in this field have not been followed up. Our agents reported a particular experiment involving a man who was capable of lifting a certain weight. It was found that editor's edition, after staring for a moment at a pink-colored screen, he consistently lost 30% of his strength. Your civilization pays no attention to such experimentation. In fact, colors can enormously influence the behavior of human beings, and yet, control of this influence requires that an individual's aura be taken into account. If, for example, you want to paint or wallpaper your bedroom with the colors that are truly appropriate for you, you must be aware of the colors of certain principal points of your aura. By matching the colors of your walls with those of your aura, you can improve your health or maintain good health. Further, the vibrations emanating from these colors are essential for good mental balance, exerting their influence even while you sleep. I was wondering how we could be expected to know these significant colors in our auras when, on Earth, we were not capable of perceiving auras. Of course, Thora replied immediately, without me having to say a word aloud. Michelle, it is now very important that your experts invent the special equipment necessary to enable perception of the aura, as this, in turn, will ensure that correct choices are made at the critical crossroads ahead. The Russians have already photographed the aura. This is the beginning, but the results obtained allow them only to read the first two letters of the alphabet, as it were, in comparison with what we are able to decipher. The reading of the aura in order to heal the physical body is nothing compared with what such a reading can achieve for the psychic body, or the physiological body. It is in the area of the psyche that, on Earth, your greatest problems exist. At the moment, most responsibility is taken for the physical body, but this is a serious mistake. If your psyche is poor, it will influence your physical appearance accordingly. But, regardless, your physical body will wear out and die one day, whereas your psyche, being part of your astral body, never dies. On the contrary, the more you cultivate your mind, the less you will be burdened by your physical body and the quicker you will proceed through your cycle of lives. We could have brought you to our planet in astral body, but instead, we have brought you here in physical body, and for an important reason. I see you already understand our reason. This pleases us, and we thank you for your willingness to assist us in our task. The Thora stopped talking and seemed to lapse into thought, at the same time, fixing me with his luminous eyes. I cannot say how much time elapsed. I know my state became more and more euphoric, and I was aware that the auras of the seven personages were gradually changing. The colors became more vivid in places, softer in others, while the outer edges became misty. This mist became more golden and pink. There was just a hint of remorse in Thor's expression. What happened to me? Let's say that you fainted, although the word is not quite appropriate. Rather, you were overwhelmed with beauty. Your new Voki allows 50% of the vibrations of color on our planet to pass, whereas your former Voki subdued all but 20%. Only 20%, that's incredible. All those marvelous colors I could see, the butterflies, the flowers, the trees, the ocean. No wonder I was overcome. I remember, during a journey I made from France to New Caledonia, we called in at the island of Tahiti. While there, I toured the island with family and friends, in a hired car. The islanders were delightful and made such a charming picture, with their straw hats constructed on the banks of lagoons amidst bougainvillea, hibiscus and exeras, red, yellow, orange and purple, surrounded by well-kept lawns and shaded by coconut trees. The backdrop to these scenes was provided by the blue of the ocean. We spent all day touring the island and I described it, and the others chose to fly independently, fluttering about our vehicle, as though playing a game, and no doubt they were. On this planet, the inhabitants seemed perpetually happy, the only ones I had found to be serious, in fact, even a little severe, despite their air of benevolence, were the seven Thori. Thori is the plural of Thora. We flew at high speed, several meters above the water, and, although my curiosity was constantly aroused, I often had to close my eyes to allow them to recover from the brightness. Still, it appeared I was going to become accustomed to it. I wondered how I would cope, though, if it occurred to Thau to give me a mask which permitted 70% of the light to penetrate, or even more. We rapidly approached the coast of the mainland, where waves were breaking over rocks of green, black, orange and gold. The iridescence of the water, crashing against the rocks, under the perpendicular rays of a midday sun, created a memorably lovely effect. A band of light and color was formed, 100 times more crystalline than a rainbow on Earth. We rose to an altitude of about 200 meters and proceeded to travel over the continent. Thau flew us over a plain on which I could see animals of all sorts. Some were two-legged and resembled little ostriches, others were four-legged creatures, similar to mammoths, but twice as big. I also watched cows graze side by side with hippopotamuses. The cows were so similar to those we have on Earth, I couldn't help but remark on it to Thau, pointing as I did so, at a particular herd, just like an excited child at the zoo. She laughed heartily. "Why shouldn't we have cows here, Michelle? Look over there and you'll see donkeys, and there, giraffes, although they are somewhat taller than on Earth. See how lovely those horses are as they run together." I was thrilled, but wasn't I constantly thrilled by this experience, sometimes a little more, sometimes a little less? What really rendered me speechless, to the amusement of my friends, was the sight of horses bearing the heads of very pretty women, some blonde, others auburn or brown, and even some with blue hair. As they galloped, they would often soar for tens of meters. Ah, yes. In fact, they had wings, folded back against their bodies, which they made use of from time to time, something like the flying fish which follow or precede ships. They lifted their heads to see us and tried to rival the speed of the Leitavok. Thau reduced speed and altitude, enabling us to approach within several meters of them. There were more surprises ahead of me, as some of these horsewomen cried out to us in a language